Hello?
Carla, this is Bill Thompson in Cincinnati.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. And you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate this.
Sure.
I'll just jump right in here. I was reading the bio on your greatest hits today, and Timothy White says he calls you customarily reticent. I hope that's not true, but it did pique my interest.
He wrote that a long time ago.
You've become less reticent since then?
Bless his soul. He was such a great writer. I think he passed away.
Oh. I didn't know that. Okay.
I think so, yeah. He wrote for Rolling Stone back in the day and then wrote those liner notes for me.
Right. So do you dislike talking about your music or in your life? Or?
No, I don't know. I mean, sometimes it's hard to talk about music, I think, because for some of us that just sort of write, we don't know exactly how we write, we just write.
Sure.
You know, sometimes it's hard to explain sort of how it works, I think, because sometimes people ask me that. But no, I mean, not generally. No, I'm good with it.
Good. I'm going to start at the beginning. One thing that strikes me is your decision, and I assume it was a decision to defy your parents by not going to college and betting on yourself in the music business. I can imagine that was a tough conversation for the daughter of a doctor and at that point when you were a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, that was not what they were expecting. I mean, I grew up across the street from UCLA, and I think they were expecting me to just walk over there and go to school, which even if I was going to go to college, I think I would have rather gone to Berkeley, which I almost
sure.
did. But I think, yeah, I mean, but I guess because I started going to the Troubadour so young and I got sucked into that whole scene so young, and I don't think they could kind of get a feel for what that was like. It was very powerful, and obviously, you know, a lot was happening, and the draw of it was so strong for me since I was already really kind of into music. I just couldn't really understand what I would do in college. It didn't make sense to me because I felt like I already knew what I wanted to do. But I can see where, you know, parents would think when you're 16 you couldn't possibly know that. So... I did have to kind of, yeah, I mean, they didn't want to give me my car or any money, or they kind of thrust me out there on my own and said, great, then you try this. And I think they thought I'd give up and come back, but I didn't. So,
no, and it's,
I think it was good for me, actually, to, you know, actually it was a good test because, you know, you see if you really want something that way because you have to work hard for it, you know.
And the thing, again, that strikes me is to have the confidence at that age, or maybe it's naivete or whatever it is, that this is what I'm going to do, and you're not thinking about backup plans or anything like that. But nevertheless, you know, we're of the same generation. We were born in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I
think, you know... There was some strength in numbers because at that point I was in that band with Kenny Edwards and Wendy Waldman and Andrew Gold. We were all sort of in that same boat and we were doing it together. So, I mean, I think that made it a little easier. Kenny was a little older. He'd been in the Stone Ponies. So, you know, and I was his girlfriend at the time. So, I mean, I was cushioned a little bit by sort of having these other people around me. It wasn't like I was really just alone out there doing it. That helped.
No, you're right. Yeah, having your friends there makes you that exponentially more powerful, I think, or more confident at that point. So, in addition to appreciating the songs when I saw you last year, when you were in Cincinnati at that point, I love the story about the Los Angeles music scene of the late 60s and the 70s. For a boy who grew up in small town Ohio, you were in the middle of where a crucial part of my, you know, music appreciation was going on. And at that point, I know you don't know anything different because that was your life.
But now I realize how incredibly lucky I was to be at that waste in time. You know, I don't think I would have ended up doing what I'm doing if I hadn't been there because of that exposure. I don't think I would have been brave enough, like some of my other friends, like J.D. Salter or Glenn Frey, to like leave their hometowns at that age and come to Los Angeles with nothing and, you know, want to be in the music business. I mean, that was very brave. You know, we were all at least, you know, all of us L.A. natives, we were still, you know, in our normal space and our parents were still around and we were, you know, in a little... We weren't quite as courageous as, you know.
People who came from Detroit or wherever.
That. Yeah, they just sure. kind of, they got in their cars and drove out there and just took their chances. So, but yeah, we didn't know. I mean, obviously I didn't know what a great moment in sort of musical time I got to be a part of. It was pretty amazing.
Having said that, is there, I know that you've said in the past that the music is in the moment and that there's no grand plan or anything like that. But after more than 50 years of doing this, I think I know a bit of the answer to this. Do you reflect on the journey? Are you able to take pride in what you've accomplished over that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing when you continue to perform and you, you know, play out there and you're talking to people who, you know, say to you that your music's been in their life, their whole life, or that your music helped them get through this or that, or, I mean, I think the gratitude I have really just for, you know, the fact that I was able to maybe, you know, leave something to people that was meaningful, and to make a living doing that, I mean, that's such a great gift. For me, I'm grateful, you know, I've been able to have this as a job and really not have to ever do anything else. So that part of it's pretty cool.
I think you have a unique perspective on that, on music and the music business. Obviously, it's the love of your life. You said it's been rewarding and lucky not to have to go to the office every day or something like that. Do you see changes these days in the business, on the road, from when you were starting out? Do you talk to younger singer-songwriters? Cross paths with people, and
I mean, sometimes we cross paths with people and I feel sympathetic to them because I think it's very hard now. You know, when we started out, you couldn't make a record at home. You had to go out and perform, and everyone had, you know, in that particular case, Los Angeles was the center of record companies and recording studios, and so we all went there. And you know, if you got signed by a label, then you had a good shot because you would get that machinery behind you. And if you were lucky enough to make a record that sold anything and you were a songwriter, you could actually make some money back then. Or even if you were just a songwriter now, I mean, I think that, you know, it's great that everybody can buy a little home studio and make a record at home, but the problem is everyone can do it, and then everyone can upload it onto the internet, and then it's all out there as content. And I don't know how people get heard. You know, I think it's so difficult to get your product out there, and you have to hope that something's going to go viral, and you have to finance it all yourself. And so to me, it just seems daunting. I don't know how anyone does it.
Yeah, it seems like, and especially radio, and again, the genres are, you know, there's not a that particular DJ, like when I was growing up, again, in Ohio, that he seemed to know what I wanted to hear. You know, now I think somebody in Omaha programs all the radio stations in the country or something like that.
And right. So you're just getting what they're feeding you. Right.
Right. And so, you know, those little quirky or something like that, or, you know, again, something different. I mean, I have a feeling that I'm like a lot of people. I knew you basically from Someone to Lay Down Beside Me and, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of the other ones. But when I walked out of your show here last year, I mean, during the show, I kept saying, I didn't know she wrote that song. I didn't know she wrote that song. I'm sure I'm not the only person who has said that to you over the years either. You've had, you know, so much success as a songwriter, you know, and now to watch you perform those songs yourself is almost like doubly gratifying as a member of the audience.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yes, a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people probably just hear things on the radio and never really pay attention to who writes things. And, you know, and then there's the other group that pay attention to everything and, you know, saw my name on a Linda Ronstadt record and went out and bought my record because of that. But a lot of people just suck up the music off the radio and don't really know the details. And so when they hear those songs, and they do know them because they've heard them by other artists or by me or whoever, you know.
Mm-hmm. I again, reading everything I can find over the past few days and trying to prepare to talk to you about this, maybe 20 years ago or something, you told an interviewer that you were semi-retired and, you know, playing shows at your pace, not someone else's, at that point. But it seems like after that, that was before the live album, I believe. And it was when... I know Kenny was still alive. I'm not sure about Andrew or whatever. Did you get like a second wind as far as performing at some point? Because it seems like you're doing a lot of performing now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said that because people were always pushing me for new albums. And so it somehow came out of my mouth, well, I'm not making records every year and a half like people do that. And we were always touring and always playing, and I've, you know, been on the road really for the last 20 years pretty consistently.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was more just an explanation of why there aren't, you know, new records all the time. And that's just because it's different now. I mean, you have to do it yourself and finance it yourself or give everything away to a small label that's not going to do a whole lot for you. So just the nature of things are different. And really for most artists, you know, financially, the money now is on the road, really, and selling CDs on the road, and not really in selling records, because pretty much, I mean, I'll give you an example. I had 1 million plays on Spotify last year, which sounds like a lot, right? You know how much money you get for that? $50.
I had an idea that it was going to be a very small figure.
Right, so that's kind of the nature of, you know, music digitally is... it's promotional at this point. It
right.
isn't. You don't make a living doing that anymore. So that's why artists are touring and out there touring, because that's really the only way to survive, you know, unless you got independently wealthy back in the 70s somehow. But I unfortunately didn't do that.
Well, that was kind of my question.
So,
I didn't know how much you enjoy doing this, and without asking to see your, you know, tax returns, how much you have to do this. And it looks like you have it down, though. I mean, again, your show with Nina is just delightful. I assume you travel well together. It looks like you're... if you've been doing this for 20 years, I either missed you when you came through the Midwest, or you're expanding your footprint a little bit these days.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we have been. I mean, yeah. I mean, I do it partially because I really want to. It breaks up, you know, just being home all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, I mean, I'm going to turn down the opportunity to make a little money. So it's both.
I see. Well, this is great. One last question. Do you have a cat these days?
You know, I just lost my last two kitties. One was 14 a year and a half ago, and then maybe 4 weeks ago, the second one, who was almost 16.
Mm.
So I'm, for the first time in like many, many years, I'm in an empty household, but I am adopting two kittens.
Good.
Later this summer. So I'm starting up again.
When I found out that Goodbye Old Friend was about a cat, I mean, it almost brought tears to my eyes. I've had cats for my entire life as well. I cried over losing one, and I actually did not cry over when my father died. And my wife thought that was very unusual.
No, it isn't unusual. I think people really have a much harder time with pets. I don't know why. It's a hard to explain thing. It's because they're so reliant on you, and they can't talk, and You can't. It's just very difficult. Yeah.
And when they're always there for you, and they don't make demands, yeah, and all those things. So.
Your attachment, I think, is so physical because they're there all the time.
Exactly. Well, as I say, we're of the same age, the same generation. We probably had many of the influences, despite the geography difference. And I just remember walking out of the show last year thinking, what a wonderful evening, 90 minutes of feeling like I was right back, you know, which is what music is supposed to do, transport you to a time and a place that was very special in my life. And thank you for taking time out today. I really appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you at the end of the month, and I'll let you know who I am that night.
Perfect.
Okay.
Take care. I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.